Motivation with Amazon Music.
You're still in bed? Didn't you go running?
Oh, I overslept.
I'll go tomorrow.
I'm getting in the shower.
Alexa, set an alarm for 5 a.m. tomorrow to hard rock music.
Okay, I'm up.
The right song exactly when you need it. Amazon Music, the simplest way to listen to the music you love. New customers start your 30-day free trial at amazonmusic.com. Renews automatically, cancel anytime.
Welcome to On Trial, starring Mark Radulich, also starring Sean Comer. Hope you're ready, Hollywood, because you're on trial.
All rise. Court is now in session. The Honorable Judge Dredd presiding. This is On Trial, your home for a podcast where we take your favorite movies and we tell you everything that's wrong with them, everything that's right about them, and all that stuff in between. Tonight I am defending one of the great cinematic triumphs in the action genre. They said it couldn't be done, but I, Mark Radulich, tonight, your mandated reporter, and frankly I'm mortified, will defend the based on a board game movie directed by Peter Berg. You know him, you love him. Ladies and gentlemen, on trial tonight, Battleship. And stepping in as the prosecution, of course, my co-host. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Sean Comer, how do you do, sir?
Miles Edgeworth for the prosecution, Your Honor. And my God, did you have the deck stacked against you this time?
Oh, it's going to be fun. All right, so real quick, I gave you a whole bunch of picks. I tend to pick the ones that go along with whatever we're doing on Damn You Hollywood, but just doing some different things with the schedules. I said, why don't we let On Trial be some off week type stuff, and where there wasn't a movie to synchronize with, I said, okay, Sean, you take us in any direction you like. So this is the beginning of the summer of Sean. We have this one. We have this. We have our tribute to the Oscars, the 1994 Oscars. And we have Dances with Wolves coming up. Why are we starting with Battleship, sir? What's on your mind besides your hat?
Well, a couple of them. A couple things, actually. Number one, I wanted to see if you could actually find a way to bullshit your way into into somehow convincingly defending this. But also, it's a bad movie that came out at a time when I didn't get out to see a whole lot of movies. I had only just moved to Phoenix, so I was really scraping and scrimping every dime that I could to try to afford moving into a new place. And so I missed this when it was in theaters, and then the reviews were so bad that I opted to ignore it entirely when it came to DVD and Blu-ray. But at the same time, I always harbored a little bit of a curiosity as to what an action blockbuster based on a board game, like an actual board game, not like Jumanji or anything, what it would look like. I now realize this is a question that never needed an answer. this had to be the product of somebody making a bet. It had to be. I refuse to believe it was anything less. Hasbro had to look at how many absurdly obscene billions of dollars Transformers made and the comparatively smaller fortune that even G.I. Joe managed to make, and say, hey, what else do you think we could get greenlit? And somebody at some point said, we made a lot of board games. I will bet you one shiny dollary-do that we could get one of those made into a movie. And somebody was actually foolish enough to doubt it. In a world in which I have now seen movies based on emoji and major food manufacturer brand mascots battling it out and matching wits for 90 minutes to 2 hours apiece. Why, oh why, was I ever surprised that this got made? And it's not impossible to make a good movie out of a board game either. I mean, hello, Clue.
Oh, Clue is brilliant.
Oh, yeah. Clue is an absolute masterpiece that was made, what, some 30 years ago?
At least, yeah.
Something like that, probably even longer ago, probably even further back than that. And it outshines this by orders of magnitude. This, what we have here is we have the world's most expensive Friday Night Lights reunion. In lieu of a whole other season, they just decided to just give Jesse Plemons, Taylor Kitsch, and Peter Berg just a shit ton of money.
Here's $220 million, kids. Have fun. What do you want to do with this? Why don't we make Battleship into a movie? are you high a little? But hear me out on this. What if aliens land in the water, okay, and proceed to play a live-action game of Battleship with the U.S. Navy? Whatever it is you're smoking, give some to me, because you clearly had too much and you need to share. But here's the coup de grace, okay? Here's what we're really going to use to sell this movie. Are you ready? Sure. We're going to get Rihanna. No. That's dumb.
Oh, God. Yeah. As I learned while researching this, the decision to cast her came from, I shit you not, Peter Berg being impressed with the way she handled a Diane Sawyer interview about her being beaten by Chris Brown. That was his actual eureka moment to cast her. And she said she took the part because it didn't seem like something too big for her to handle.
And yet she clearly whiffed.
And she still won a Razzie for it.
Yeah, she's terrible. Look, I'll go ahead and say right now, I have an argument for this. I want to hear your prosecution, but I have a set argument for this movie. But again, when it comes to Rihanna, we love Bart.
Chalk it up to my age if you want to. I don't personally give a fig, but I lump her into that same category as Beyonce in terms of musicians / actresses for whom I'm clearly just too old to fully grasp the appeal.
Yeah.
And I'm fine with that.
Look, there are some that have been able to make the transition to acting, and they've done a fairly decent job of it. And some, started off a little awkwardly, but over time, like Queen Latifah didn't exactly light up the stage when she first showed up on screen. But I would say she's a passable actress now. I don't have a problem with her. Mm-hmm. One could forget that she started out as a rapper.
Yeah. Yeah, she's fine. LL Cool J has done all right for himself. Mm-hmm. Same could be said for Ice Cube, Ice-T. And I'm sure if you looked outside of hip hop and R&B, you'd probably find some more examples.
But they can't all be winners. And Rihanna.
No.
And Rihanna's a really good example of not a winner.
No, she seriously isn't. And really, there's not much to the making of this movie to speak of. First and foremost, just to get the black and white numbers out of the way. As you pointed out, the budget was somewhere in the neighborhood of between $209 and $220 million. Did $303 million at the box office. So it made its money back, and by contemporary Hollywood standards, not a whole hell of a lot more. In other words, it didn't make Transformers money. So it was destined to kind of go down as a failure. A pretty impressive cast. As I said, you know, this is one of a string of blockbusters that tried to really get Taylor Kitsch over as a Hollywood's next shining star of a young leading man. He plays opposite Alexander Skarsgård. You've got, as I said, Rihanna. During a period when, you know, Brooklyn Decker was also kind of being put out there as one of the hottest next big things this side of sliced bread, canned beer, and free internet porn. She plays the main love interest. Liam Neeson is in there for a hot second. Peter fucking McNichol, yes, Yadosh from Ghostbusters 2, is the Secretary of Defense.
And he doesn't say, why are my drippings with goo?
Much to my disappointment. You've got Jesse Plemons in a supporting role, which is just kind of what Jesse Plemons does. That and makes babies with Kirsten Dunst. I was intrigued to find out that we actually have a character named Yuji Nagata. So as a big old Japanese professional wrestling fan, that kind of made me giggle a little bit. But you know, lots of impressive set pieces, lots of on location shoots. They managed to work actual sailors and actual warships into the scenery. There was evidently Peter Berg felt that he was totally qualified to kind of depict the workings of the crew of a battleship, because he comes from a military family. By all means, go ahead, watch it yourself. You decide whether or not that was true. But otherwise, there just wasn't a whole lot else to it, except that it was a big expensive movie that it kind of launched the idea. Kind of helped further the idea of, hey, if it's a toy, we can make it into something people will pay $10 to see in theaters. Somehow I get the feeling that is not true.
All right. So let's go ahead and do our 10-cent plot synopsis, and then we'll go right into putting this on trial, as the name goes. So, in short, and I'm not even going to look at the Wikipedia page because it's just not worth it. All you need to know is there's scientists discover a galaxy that possibly has a planet in it that may support intelligent life. They send they try to contact said planet, and around the same time, Taylor Kitsch is a ne'er-do-well, not doing much with his life. In an effort to impress a girl, he gets himself arrested, and his brother says, "You know what? You're a fuck-up. You need to go into the Navy and get yourself right," which he does. So fast forward 7 years, and we have two things happening. One, we have a couple of things happening. One, we have Taylor Kitsch, who's trying to marry the girl he was trying to impress, who turns out is the daughter of a Navy officer, who is Liam Neeson. Taylor Kitsch has, in fact, joined the Navy, but because he's still kind of a fuck-up, he's just a fuck-up in uniform, he's about ready to get thrown out of the Navy. And aliens land. The aliens that were contacted in a galaxy far, far away have shown up to Earth, and like every alien in the Hollywood universe, they're here for our resources. They have come a conquering. There's never... The only friendly alien in the history of cinema is E-fucking-T. Not Mr. T, E-T. Although E-T, Mr. T is probably an alien, too. You heard it here first. Anywho. So... The in the process of landing on the planet, the communication ship ends up crashing. So the aliens then figure out, all right, well, we've got to reestablish communications with the mothership, you know, back home, send reinforcements, supplies, etc. So mission objective here is to get to the satellite that sent the message in the first place so they can send another one home and says, hey, send more shit. Ma, send money. Gots to do laundry. In the process of doing all that, a force field goes up that cuts off Taylor Kitsch's ship, Alexander Skarsgård's ship, and one Japanese ship that happened to be in the area because they were doing exercises. And an attack happens. The brother's ship is destroyed along with the brother. The Japanese ship is destroyed, though the crew is saved. There's a great exchange where Taylor Kitsch has to make a decision: save the Japanese sailors or ram the alien ship. He chooses to ram the alien ship, like you do. But eventually, common sense rears its head, and he's stopped from doing that. While this is all happening, what's going on with his beautiful girlfriend? Turns out she's a physical therapist, and she's working with a retired double amputee army colonel, and they're hiking. They happen to be near where the satellites are. They run into a scientist who said, hey, if we ever run into aliens, we're probably going to all get killed. Turns out he was right. And the three of them decide over the course of time that they're going to try to stall the aliens from sending a message home so that this doesn't turn into a full-scale invasion that we can't handle. Meanwhile, back in the Pacific Ocean, what we have are three alien vessels and one destroyer. And they decide to use tsunami buoy technology. And this is where... This is the brilliance of the movie right here. This is your actual battleship sequence. The ships can't see... The alien ships can't see the Navy ship. And the Navy ship can't see them. So they do certain maneuvers to try to hit the to try to hit each other. And you see this, and again, this is brilliant. And I don't want to do too much of my argument here, but I have to talk about this. The aliens actually send up ordnance that plug into the ship like the pegs in the actual battleship game, and then explode. That's fucking awesome. Anywho. This results in two of the alien ships getting destroyed, but the third one, not so much. The third one is able to take out the destroyer. They are eventually able to get the shield down and get to land, at which point, you know, they still have to take out this one last ship. They have to make sure that the transmission doesn't go through. So our third act is them taking the USS Missouri battleship out of mothballs, along with the retired Navy sailors that were keeping the ship spick and span, preserved, if you will. They all, to the sounds of AC/DC's Thunderstruck, get the ship afloat, and they proceed to attack the final ship and blow up the satellites and save the day. Yep, a retired World War II battleship is able to take out an alien vessel. Hollywood. Taylor Kitchen Company saved the day. He's awarded medals. The lieutenant colonel is awarded medals. And Taylor Kitsch is kind of sort of given permission to finally marry his girlfriend. And in a post-credit scene, there's still an alien out there, and it reaches out and allegedly scares the shit out of people. And so that's our movie. All right. The prosecution, make your case, sir.
Thank you, your judginess. You know, if you were to compare the DC extended universe of live action movies and the Marvel Cinematic Universe, an overarching lesson begins to emerge, and that is, being a huge budget action movie is no longer a plausible excuse for skimping on story. So let's just run down just a couple of problems here straight from the outset. All right. I'm willing to forgive the cliche of Taylor Kitsch is the bad boy who goes into the military to hopefully save himself from a life of crime and adulthood thrown down the drain and yada yada yada. Let's just kind of set that aside for a moment. Although, you know, it is the catalyst for having Alexander Skarsgård in the movie in a small bit role and ultimately outshining Taylor Kitsch entirely. Even for just the brief time he's in the actual movie. I'm willing to forgive that part, but then come the huge logical leaps that there's never even an attempt to try to explain reasonably. Okay, for starters, we have an alien race that has come to Earth because, once more, as is always the case in these movies, humanity always just assumes that the aliens are going to come bring in beers and bitches. They're going to be friendly. They're here for a kegger. Why would we ever assume anything else, despite the fact that we've written countless stories, you know, literary works, TV shows, movies, video games, all suggesting otherwise? I'm pretty sure, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, that there is at least one major world government that actually has a hypothetical contingency plan for making first contact with an extraterrestrial species. And I'm pretty sure it doesn't include just figuring they're coming in peace. So, mistake number one. Hey, we found a world of intelligent life. Well, surely they're going to want to be broke. But then the aliens actually come to Earth, and herein comes the part where you almost have to assume that they just might be as collectively stupid as humanity. Because while approaching from orbit, and with light years upon light years to get the lay of our land and decide on ideal points of attack, you know, maybe play a few games of our primitive Risk to test out a few battle scenarios. What do they decide to go for first? This alien species that is apparently critically allergic to sunlight? Hawaii. They're going to come at the entire planet by first attacking Hawaii. Okay, when it was Japan poking the bear during World War II, it made strategic sense. when you are bringing the might of your species down upon an entire planet filled with colossal land masses and massive cities, you're going to go after a little group of islands soaked in pretty much your one weakness. I hope your head is starting to hurt already. I really do. This is your point of attack. We're not going to figure, we could attack there, but there's this massive I've been under the weather the past few days, forgive me. This gigantic landmass they seem to call Asia. Full of tons of people and potentially a more hospitable, less solar climate. We could really strike there and just spread outward across Asia and conquer it in the manner of the fabled human hero Dom Toretto, and just take the whole thing and just attack outward from there. Just expand our empire that way. No, let's go for the vacation hotspot. Because why not? After that, it's one cliche after another. Taylor Kitsch, really, let's be honest, he just kind of fails upward through the ranks to eventually become an officer somehow, because plot says so. As I mentioned, you know, his brother Stone, played by Alexander Skarsgård, gets killed off and kind of serves as the fire in Alex's belly to get revenge on them bad old aliens that we kind of sort of provoked. you have the quiet, unassuming nerdy guy who has already figured out way ahead of everybody else that oh no, the aliens don't want a party. They kind of want to break whatever passes for their feet off in our asses. And of course, does anybody listen to him? No, not until it's too late. You've seen one of these movies, you've really seen all of them. But again, the problem is, you look at the budget and you look at $220 million. You couldn't have spared some of that for a non-brain injured writer? For somebody who looks at this story and then says to the studio executive, says, okay, I don't know whose cousin you had write this and whether you can get the money back, but sweethearts, I'm going to sit here and explain to you like you're five why this is all a very stupid thing. You really have to shoehorn in the actual references to the game too. And that's the kind of tragic part. Is I was intrigued when I initially heard about it. I didn't think it was going to be good, but I was at least intrigued to know, okay, how are you going to take this basically storyless, by-the-numbers strategy game and adapt it into a full-fledged 90-minute to two-hour movie? Well, they kind of found a way. I mean, it's like Mark said, it was contrived. It was ridiculous. It suggests that we might want to throw our... No, you know what? Here's another one. These aliens have mastered travel across the stars. They've come from a distant planet to make war with us. And yet, once they're here, our most rudimentary satellite technology, correction, sabotaging our own rudimentary satellite technology is enough to make it so that they can't render a visual targeting solution on one of our warships when it's within, like, reasonable physical proximity? Like, when they're fighting in the same body of water. They're just rendered helpless. All they can do is pretty much just fire blind. We can't see them. They can't see. This is a species that has mastered space travel. And evidently, they have all the target acquisition. They can acquire a target with about all the prowess of a stormtrooper. How did you even manage to get to the right interstellar body? How did you make it to Earth when you can't? How did you manage an FTL jump when you can't hit a boat with reasonable assurance when you are in the same goddamn body of water? But then again, they're further undone by the Greatest Generation when later in the movie, we cobble together a herd of elderly sailors and manage to take down their theoretically advanced beyond our comprehension warship with a completely decommissioned World War II battleship that, and I'm going to ask for the defense's help with this one, about how long was it suggested that all these retrofits took to make it battle-worthy again?
A few hours.
Okay. All the modern bleeding edge military technology at our disposal, and we decide that we're going to take the military industrial equivalent to dental floss and clarinet reeds to a disused battleship in about the time it takes to watch an extended cut of a Lord of the Rings movie, and that's going to win the day. Oh God, it hurts. It hurts so goddamn much. About the only credit I can give the movie is at least it has an honest to God third act. They at least tried something. It wasn't just a giant bukkake of super tight angles, CGI, and explosions like the original Transformers. But then again, on the other hand, at least the Transformers movie attempted some actual characters. I mean, they were stock, sometimes offensive, constantly grating, but they tried. This is what they threw together with $220 million. Get the director and two of the kids from Friday Night Lights. Here, let's get one of the world's biggest R&B stars and, oh, look, an underwear model. She'll do. Someone evidently got wind that Liam Neeson needed the money. It could spare a few days of his time.
Objection. So the story goes like this. Liam Neeson wanted to buy a boat, and his agent goes, well, if you want to buy a boat, boy, have I got the movie for you. And
I pray to God you're being hyperbolic.
I'm quite so. Quite so.
Need somebody to play Secretary of Defense. Hey, who else would you pick except Peter McNichol? allow me to remind you, this was all before Trump. when something like that would actually feel plausible. It's the reviews really speak for themselves. You have people who are able to look past it all and just say, ah, fuck it, it was dumb fun. But then you have everybody else who just says, no, just no. We've come so far since then that really there's no excuse for having a movie where you're just saying, okay, you can either have boom boom or you can have story. You can't have both. No, because so many movies have given us both of them. And they've done so on a lesser budget. I mean, the fact this thing even made $8.8 million on its opening day is, and finished second place to the Avengers when it debuted, it is more than a little bit stunning. It really is. It's a movie that tries to be just about the simplest thing in the world and can't even manage that. It tries to be an Independence Day clone, but it's an Independence Day clone where about the only thing it matches are the set pieces and the sound editing and the visual effects, which I'm not going to lie, are all pretty much top tier, as you would expect from a major studio like Universal. I mean, we're not dealing with an Asylum mockbuster here. But the problem being, it can't even muster the satisfying cheese of Armageddon. It doesn't manage the personality of Independence Day. Nobody has the charisma of a Will Smith or a Jeff Goldblum to carry this movie. Nobody is such a stirring, over the top, flag sticking out of his ass, real Merkin hero as Bill Pullman. Just none of the above. As we so often come across with these movies, it's a flick that kind of knows sort of what it wants to try to be, but it has no idea why that movie it's trying to emulate actually worked. In fact, and I say this as somebody who absolutely loved Friday Night Lights, Peter Berg was probably the wrong choice for this movie. I'll go out on a limb and say that actually, had you put Roland and Toby Emmerich at the helm of this thing, you might have ended up with something not just watchable, but kind of surprisingly good. It was a nice try with the whole pegs that fire and embed themselves right inside the battleship as a means to somehow tie it back to this game, but quite frankly, it holds about as much water as marketing a DP anal porn and deciding you're going to call it Boggle.
That's quite the boggle.
You have the floor.
All right. I submit to you my first bit of evidence. Thunder. You've been thunderstruck. Come on. Everybody knows in Hollywood and around the world that when you hear AC/DC's Thunderstruck, you know you're in for a party. That is magic movie mania right there. Thunderstruck. It's a bunch of people busily doing stuff, getting ready for the final battle to AC/DC's Thunderstruck. You know they're going to win the day. And that's what we all paid to see. Look, nobody went into Battleship thinking, oh, well, here, you know, we're going to get some deep examinations of the human psyche and the meaning of life. Nope! You went in to see an action movie based on a board game. And they threw in AC/DC's Thunderstruck. Mission accomplished. Now, let's talk about this movie for just one second. As we said in our preamble, Rihanna's terrible. Okay? But, for the most part, her aside, and she doesn't take up too much screen time, thankfully, a lot of the movie rests on Taylor Kitsch, and he's trying. You know, he certainly gets angry in all the right places. He certainly looks dazed and confused in many of the scenes and in over his head, and that's what his character was. His character, I mean, when you think about, you know, the prosecution said that there's no story here. In many ways, Battleship deals with the hero's journey. Okay? So you have this guy who does not want to be a leader. He does not want to have the power. Does not think he is deserving of the stature that his brother has earned. And when life and death struggles rear their head, he is faced with having to take on the mantle of leader, even though he's not ready for it, he doesn't want it, and at first he makes some really terrible choices. But over the course of the movie, and again, we've seen this in many other, movies before, not nearly done as well as it's done in Battleship, I'll have you know. You have a guy who rises to the challenge and is able to learn a little bit about himself, forgive himself for his past transgressions, and take ownership of the fact that he does deserve good things. He deserves a hot blonde model wife, okay? He deserves medals. He deserves to win the day against alien invaders. He's not a bad guy. He deserves all those things. And the movie tells us that. And it tells us that, I think, in a very simple but effective story. So, the arc is there. I mean, when we talk about putting a movie on trial, you have to ask, well, what is it guilty of in the first place? Is it guilty of being of trying to be Hamlet and failing? No, this was not trying to be Hamlet. Nobody thought that. Nobody. Okay? Nobody who greenlit the thing thought, okay, we want Hamlet on a battleship. Nope, that's not what happened. Nobody said, I'm going to buy my ticket. This is going to be Hamlet in the Pacific Ocean. Nobody thought this. They went in to see, hey, I hear there's a movie out there that's based on a board game where aliens attack and they blow them to hell with battleships. Awesome. That's it. That is all we had to see. Does it borrow a little from, you know, Independence Day and some of these other alien attack movies? Sure. But, I mean, are we really going to sit here and bemoan, oh, there's nothing new in Hollywood anymore? Of course there isn't. It's what you do with that story. And I thought, you know, when you think about the aliens in Independence Day and how overpowered they were, in a lot of ways it takes the fun out of that movie for me. A lot of these aliens that come down, the xenomorphs from the Aliens franchise, the Predators, they're so overpowered, it's almost unbelievable that the humans ever win. You know, they're all Thanos. You know, as said in the comic books, not the movies, you know, there's no spoilers here. But as said in the comic books about Thanos, he's so powerful, the only way that you can beat him is if he allows you to. Which isn't fun for me, and I don't think it's fun for a lot of people. And that's what happens with a lot of these alien attack movies, is that they're so overpowerful that they have to make an overridingly stupid mistake that isn't really believable in the narrative in order for the good guys to have their opportunity. These folks seem like they're from the Alabama of space. Okay? These guys, they can't see in sunlight. They're like half vampire. They're crashing ships. Could you imagine the dialogue on those spaceships? Hey, Ma! We're almost there! Hey! You're going to hit that satellite! Ah, I shouldn't have drank before we flew here. All right, I mean, I'm imagining that's what happened. So, these redneck aliens, okay, who, you know, in their junky ships, fly here because they too are facing the idiocracy on their world, and they have to get off of it before President Alien Trump sinks them to hell. It's all in the movie, folks. You just gotta look for it.
Stop making laughter hurt.
It's brilliant. Battleship, it's brilliant. So, you really do get a sense that they have a fighting chance to get these mopes who flew here and crashed into a satellite and into Tokyo, Hong Kong, you know, and now they're in the water and, you know, there's an alien that you didn't see in the movie, but I'm sure he's there and he's got a bucket and he's trying to get the water out of the spaceship, you know, the whole deal. So again, you have, you know, at first it's like, oh, aliens, oh, we're in trouble now, but like we're kind of evenly matched, right? And that's again the brilliance of Battleship the movie, is that if you take a look at the board game, you have five ships, five on each side, and you're evenly matched. You know, you can't see each other, and so it's all a guessing game, and you sort of have to figure out, using, you know, some degree of strategy or just blind luck, where your opponent is, and then follow some sense of logic. And that's exactly what that sequence in the movie is. They made it a point, you know, and the prosecution said it was shoehorned in, but no, they made it a point to set up a sequence where neither one of these opponents could see each other, and they had to employ some degree of creative logic in order to find one another. And we, you know, we got a fairly interesting action sequence out of it. It's not one I've seen in a lot of other movies, so points for creativity and ingenuity there. And again, points for being able to bring the elements of the board game into the movie, because it takes forever to get there. You know, between the setups and all the characters and everything else, this is definitely not one of those movies where they were in a rush to get to the mall. We're talking midway through the movie when this happens. And that's a brave choice. That's a brave choice. Because you could get to the point where you could forget this was based on a board game, and you're just in some sort of like sci-fi action adventure, you know, with redneck aliens and Navy seamen fighting it out in the Pacific Ocean, and then you're like, oh yeah, and then they do the sequence. You're like, oh yeah, this is Battleship, duh, got it. It's a very pretty movie, you know. The prosecution brought up, like, with all of your maps and technology and ability to travel through space, you land in Hawaii of all places. Well, again, they were drunk. And and a little bit of DUI happening in Interstellar DUI.
Because Space-Obama.
It's Space-Obama. But they're here, and we have to deal with that. So we're in Hawaii, and it looks gorgeous. You know, it's again, film is a visual medium, and you know, unlike an Independence Day or some of these other movies where everything is in sepia tone, you know, everything looks like you know, Escape from New York. You know, everything is Mad Max looking. This is actually a gorgeous movie. You know, it's pretty blue water and the gorgeousness of Hawaii in and of itself as a setting. You know, and then you have the actual alien attack weapons. And so here's the... And I really need to make a point about this. Michael Bay is terrible, okay? You know, Michael Bay has a few good movies to his name, but if you look at the Transformers movies... Now, I have said on many occasions, and somewhere out there, Robert Winfrey, his neck is going to start to itch, and he's going to wonder why. And that's because I'm about to tell you that Age of Extinction is a fantastic movie. Well done. But Age of Extinction is one of those cinematic pieces of art that it's just... No matter how many times you watch it, it's never enough. It's a brilliant movie. But what I'm trying to get to is that Michael Bay's action sequences in the Transformers are unreadable and mostly terrible and give people seizures and headaches, okay? They are torture devices of the highest norm. It's one step below waterboarding to get through these movies. And you can't tell what's what. And Battleship, directed by Peter Berg, well, some might say it looks like they were using special effects left over from the Transformers movies, or at least highly inspired by them. This was at least readable action. You knew what was happening. You knew what the weapons were, what they could do shortly after they were introduced. The destruction and mayhem that they caused was all readable. You understood what was happening. It was all very clean and nice looking. And again, you know, with so many movies out there that deal with giant robots and monsters and large-scale destruction, it's very easy to, you know, to be, you know, a Michael Bay and just get lost in the process and serve up unreadable scenes. These were very readable. And I think you have to give the devil its due in that I don't think anyone's confused in what's happening in Battleship. I don't think anyone walked out of that movie and went, I have no idea what in the hell I just watched. Nope, it's... You don't get much more simple than this. And I points for simplicity in a genre that can sometimes get overly cocked up and complicated and completely unreadable. Lastly, Rihanna aside, I thought Jesse Plemons did a really good job with his character. He has a really great line in this. You know, they're all scared to death. Look, you know, you join the Army, you join the Navy or the Marines or whatever. You're expecting to get into fights for the most part, though oddly enough, some people joined the military and thought, well, I never thought I'd have to fight. But that's a podcast for another day. You know, but there is some expectation of the danger you face when you decide to put on the uniform. I don't think most of them ever thought they'd be fighting an alien vessel with superior technology. And when you experience large-scale trauma and violence, who amongst us knows exactly how you'll react under those circumstances? Sure, it's like a mugging type of thing, you know, or your first day in prison. You know, it's like, oh, we have an idea of how we might act, but you don't really know until you're put into that situation. And I thought he captured that really well. You know, there's just, everything's on fire, everyone's screaming, and everyone's frightened, and Jesse Plemons looks at Taylor Kitsch and says, give me an order, sir, I don't know what to do. And I thought that was very believable. You know, in a schlock movie where aliens from Alabama invade the Earth and have a fight in the water for some odd reason, I thought that was a very human moment in a wildly absurd feature. So points for Peter Berg and Jesse Plemons and the writers for not forgetting what it means to be a human being in fantastic circumstances. Because a lot of movies do. A lot of movies really will. It's just one action sequence after another, and there's no humanity. And I thought, and this might sound like a strange thing to say about Battleship the movie, but I thought in many places this was a very human movie. Again, you have Taylor Kitsch with his struggles. You have Jesse Plemons with, you know, trying to figure out what to do in a moment of panic. You know, you have a couple of other sequences where people are just trying to figure out what to do next and not die. And you save a lot of that for, like, war pictures. You know, the real-life story of the soldiers who took on the impossible fight and won, and, you know, that sort of thing. And they use that dramatic elements in a story with redneck aliens fighting in the Pacific Ocean with a Navy ship. So kudos and points for remembering that, you know, that movies should be about people and not just explosions, which is a weird thing to say about Battleship, but I 100% believe that. The defense rests.
Well, the defense mentioned the notion that nobody was really expecting Hamlet. No, we weren't expecting Hamlet, but we were kind of hoping for something better than a movie that it feels like it should be preceded by We've Got Movie Sign. I mean, you only get to take a fairly novel idea, like a movie based on Battleship, and do it the first time once. That's your one chance to make a good first impression. What do you decide to do with it? Space-Obama aliens. They don't necessarily outmatch us with technology. They're not strategic masterminds. Nope, they just kind of caught us by surprise was really all that happened here. That's it. We just kind of had to sit there and go, well, we certainly didn't expect that. And of all the scenarios we ran down of ways aliens might try to conquer our planet, we didn't expect them to go for the tiny islands first. Not sure what that's all about. Just bypassed all the major population centers and all the geographic advantages of other areas they could have conquered much more quickly. And, I'm sorry, Mr. President. Hawaii? Really?
Did you not see the bumper sticker on the back of the alien ship that said spring break?
I mean, let's face it, to put a more contemporary spin on it, these are the alien equivalent to the Paul brothers going to Japan and just fucking with people. So, it not only serves to make the movie predictable, but not even really all that interesting when you have to think, when you really stop and think about it and go, we have a pretty enormous advantage here. I mean, man, let's hope we're at least going to get some interesting personal development out of this. And nope, that's pretty much by the numbers too. I mean, I have trouble with the notion that there were people the weekend this premiered who had a choice of, well, I could go see the Avengers for a second time, or I mean, about the nicest thing that anybody can and should say about it is, yeah, the aesthetics of it are outstanding. Cosmetically, it's a job well done. As the defense pointed out, you can at least see what's going on. You can at least follow the action. That's good. And you'll never hear me have a bad thing to say about Jesse Plemons as an actor. I like him. I liked him in Friday Night Lights, Crucifictorious, yo. And I even liked him in the final season of Breaking Bad as Meth Damon. Taylor Kitsch, he is who he is. Decent actor, plays the part he's asked to play here well. But there's just not a whole lot to work with because, I mean, up to a certain point, you're going to start thinking about the plot holes, and all of a sudden you're going to lose any reason to kind of remain invested in the movie. You're just going to keep marveling at, wow, this is the interstellar species that's going to put us in our place, huh? Wow. The question was asked, what is the movie really guilty of? And I'm not going to say that it should have been an existential masterpiece, but it doesn't feel like much more effort was put into it than you would expect from your typical direct-to-video offering. You know, it feels like something that I would have maybe grabbed off the shelf of my local video store when I was 14 years old if there was absolutely nothing else. Like, I would have looked and gone, huh, okay, no, Leprechaun's checked out, no, Independence Day, no men in black, nah, store's closing in 15 minutes, this'll do. I mean, that's about all there is to it, is the fact that it was at least a somewhat interesting idea, if not exactly a perfect one, but just one that feels like maybe it could have been surprising with just a little bit more effort. I mean, occasionally that is what happens with adaptations. You get somebody behind it who actually has a little bit of a vision, who's willing to throw some things at the wall to see what sticks. And what you get back is, well, like I said before, Clue. I mean, if you've ever played Clue the board game, it doesn't come across as something that really should have produced a movie that's as funny and as engaging and rewatchable as that was. But that happened because people actually put a little bit of love into it. They clearly wanted to do something a little bit different. In this case, nope. Nope. Why bother? I mean, just don't go for the home run. Don't even go for a single. Just try to kind of lean into the fastball a little bit. You know, and that way you'll at least get to first base. And that's what this movie did. It at least made its budget back. It got beaned in the nuts. It took its base. But man, would I have loved to have seen somebody who actually took a look at that concept and went, okay, I can work with this. I can make this into something special. I can take this chicken shit and make chicken cordon bleu out of this. But then again, this is Hollywood we're talking about. And by the way, speaking of which, I invite you all to check out my forthcoming independent Czech snuff film, Hungry Hungry Hippos, coming to an art house near you, 2019.
Terrific. All right. I don't even have a rebuttal. So I remember the first time I watched this, our closing discussion. I remember the first time I watched this, I was putting away laundry. It was sort of background noise. I think I had got it on Netflix or whatever. And I remember thinking, God, this is so stupid. This is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. But I wasn't in the mode where I had to be accepting of it. You know, like going into this podcast, I watched the movie with a mind of, what's good about this? Before I was just like, well, what do you got from your movie? Impress me. And it didn't. And I continued to put away t-shirts. I had a much more enjoyable experience the second time around watching it, trying to figure out what's good about these things. And it, if nothing else, it kind of taught me the lesson of, you know, don't treat movies like, you know, like some people do a significant other in a relationship. Go on, make me happy. I'm not putting any effort into this, but you make me happy. You be good. And then when it's not, be mad about it. You know, it's like, no, you have to kind of go in and be somewhat ready for some of the nonsense you're about to be exposed to. You're the one that chose to watch a stupid alien attack movie based on a board game. So yeah, I enjoyed it. I watched it by myself. I normally kind of try to show these things to my kids, but they saw what I was watching and they went like, all right, lots of luck, you know, and they went about their day. But it's fun to, somebody asked me today, I was talking about this at work. I said, you know, oh, I'm going to do a podcast tonight where I'm going to try to talk about the merits of Battleship. And they went, why? Why would you do that? And I said, to me, it's a lot of fun to take a movie that's universally panned and try to figure out what's really fun, what's good about it, what's fun, what worked. It's when I posted this on Facebook, you know, of course, people, you know, it's like, you know, tonight, Battleship on trial, and people immediately just started commenting guilty. But I think it's a lot more fun to say, huh, well, yeah, sure. It had a 30% Rotten Tomato rating, and it only made back its budget. It was a loss for the studio. But what's good about it? You know, where does it work? And really try to stretch a bit.
Here's my question, though, and it's one that I really should have brought up earlier. You know, there's a point in this movie where, via some kind of telepathic link, it's revealed that these Space Obama invaders are actually on a bit of a winning streak when it comes to conquering other worlds. Holy shit, how pathetic must the other supposedly advanced species have been that they got their asses handed to them by these guys?
They probably did not have 50-year-old battleships just waiting to be renewed.
Was this the space combat equivalent of the Seinfeld episode where Kramer takes a martial arts class and spends the entire time beating the piss out of elementary age children?
Probably.
Until they all gang up on him in an alley?
Well, in all seriousness, if you're capable of warp drive and interstellar travel, and you can get a sense of what planets are out there, maybe by the time they got to Earth, they had already conquered the Goldilocks planets for them that had the underdeveloped species on them that were easy pickings, and they were starting to work their way into intermediate level. And they were not ready for our jelly, Sean. They just were not ready. They were not ready for the chutzpah of rehabbing a ship, like a World War II battleship, and saying, fuck your couch.
I'm also trying to origami my brain around the notion that the two tipping points for Peter Berg were seeing Rihanna act on Saturday Night Live and a Diane Sawyer interview.
Well, you know, if that's all it takes to get into films, man, I'll let Chris Brown beat the fuck out of me. I don't care. Jesus, I didn't realize that's all it took. All right, I think that's a great place to end this discussion.
Yes, it is. before this turns into a debate of the merits of getting our ass handed to us by Chris Brown.
So the next time we'll be doing an On Trial will be our 1994 Oscar debate. I will be defending the merits of Forrest Gump, and Sean will be defending the merits of The Shawshank Redemption.
Shawshank Redemption.
Yes, and that is going to be June 5th, a couple of days after my birthday. So I am defending why Forrest Gump should have won the Oscar, and you will be defending why Shawshank Redemption should have won, and we'll deal with Pulp Fiction next year.
It's On Trial civil court.
Yes. But we're not done with Sean just yet. Sean's going to join us next week for our Arrow Season 6 discussion. Really all things Arrow on the CW we'll talk about. The finale for this season of Arrow will debut a week from Thursday. So, you know, before that final episode, you know, we'll talk about Season 6. We'll talk about the preceding seasons, and we'll take some guesses as to what happens in the finale. It'll be myself, it'll be Sean, it'll be Ronnie Adams of the Screaming Boy Podcast. In the meantime, check out our He-Man Thundercats episode on Source Material. Check out the Screaming Boy Podcast, where we discuss what the hell happened to MoviePass. Tomorrow on the Metal Hammer of Doom is the Monster Magnet, Mindfucker, and just announced, because, you know, I've been sleeping too much lately, I need to start having some nightmares. We're going to do a commentary on The Last Unicorn, and that's this Thursday on the Rattlesnake Broadcasting Network. It'll be a cast of thousands. Haggard Unicorn! All right, go ahead and do your plug, Sean.
Nothing really to plug. Follow me on Twitter to drop off all your love, hate, and respectful disagreements at Comer Codex. And several times a week, you can also catch me playing video games on Twitch at twitch.tv/ComerCodex. Lately, I've been playing a whole lot of Bloodborne, Overwatch, Smite, and Dead by Daylight. My schedule is a little bit inconsistent because I'm in the home stretch of getting ready to move back to Phoenix, and so I'm working on a bunch of other stuff, and also I've been a tad under the weather this past week. Lately, if you just can't get enough of me in your life for some reason, number one, God help you, and number two, just hit me up there. We'll hang out. We'll have a few laughs. We'll cry. We'll question the meaning of life. And in the meantime, never dull your colors for someone else's canvas.
All right, everybody, that's the end of our show. All rise. The honorable judge has left the chambers. Be well, be safe, and behave.
Today's sales leaders face a difficult task, selling the right products at the right time through the right channels. A new 3-day program from Harvard Business School Executive Education addresses this problem directly. Join us on the Boston campus in August for Managing Sales Teams and Distribution Channels, where you will discover strategies that can lead to the best sales performance. Learn more by clicking the banner or visiting hbs.me/sales. That's hbs.me/sales.